As we continue tonight here on this theme of obedience to God's authority, what we did on Sunday is we referenced back to some Old Testament examples of just how serious is God about wanting everything He says to be followed just the way He said it. And there's some interesting stories we can find in the Old Testament in particular that I think helps to illustrate to us that God's real serious about these things. Well, we've always seen that. I mean, everything we've looked at in our studies here so far, as we've looked at who God is and His right to rule and His authority, we've seen this over and over again, that when God gives a command, He expects that to be taken and followed exactly as He says. On Sunday, on page 21, what we were looking at here, as we were kind of prepping to go back to some of these Old Testament examples, we made some points from Scripture that the Old Testament is given to us for a purpose, for our learning. And there are some very valuable examples for us to look at there. And sometimes that slips away from us a little bit. And maybe we don't use some of the examples from the Old Testament as much as we should. But we learn so much about the nature of man. We learn about the nature of God by looking at some of these Old Testament texts. On Sunday, we talked some about Nadab and Abihu. And I want you to tell me some things. There are several things that we learned from Nadab and Abihu. And I want us to think about that for just a moment. They were priests, as we recall. And the priests had been given certain responsibilities, certain things that they were to do. But there were some things that went dreadfully wrong in the life of Nadab and Abihu and in their work as priests. Tell me what happened. What happened with Nadab and Abihu, and why did it happen? Who's going to get us started? Strange fire. The text is pretty straightforward about the fact, depending on which version you're reading, they offered strange fire, or they offered unauthorized fire before the Lord. Okay, tell me some more. They died. Here is the result of doing that. Why did they die? God disciplined them. There was discipline that was immediate. Some say, you know, God is so harsh. How can a loving God be so harsh? What would you say? Why do you suppose He did that to Nadab and Abihu?
I think He set an example.
I mean, think about this. I mean, they were priests. I mean, if there was anyone who should have known and understood that they needed to do exactly as God said, surely they should have understood that. Yeah.
Conduct themselves by the law. And we have an illustration in the very first chapter showing here's what happens if you don't conduct.
Yeah. Interesting. Of course, Leviticus written years after the event really took place. I mean, when Moses wrote that, as I would understand. And so he starts the book by, you know, here's this account. You know, here's some things that happen. Or here's what the priests are supposed to do, you know. And there should have been no confusion, no question in their mind as to what their responsibility was and how they were to offer this incense, a sacrifice. But they were the ones that did not obey. Right. Yeah. I mean, you talk again about an example being set. I mean, here were some of the leaders among the Jews. These were the priests. These were the ones that were, can we say, in as close proximity to God as anyone could be with regard to the temple worship or tabernacle worship as it was at the time. You know, and here's what happens if they disobey. Interesting to think about, and you know, the fact that they were priests, and today in Christ, we are priests. And I think, you know, as the comment was made, they were the ones that should have known, should have been the closest to God. And if we are priests today, what does that say? Aren't we the ones that are supposed to be the closest to God? Just some things to think about. Right, right. Thank you. Excuse. We can't find one good enough, is the thing. Let's look at another passage. Let's move on here to the next point. 2 Chronicles chapter 26, King Uzziah. Let's just talk about the good king here for a few minutes. 2 Chronicles chapter 26. You know, again, we're reading here something about burning incense and sacrifice being made at the temple. And so we already know a little bit about that from studying about Nadab and Abihu. But as this story unfolds, we're in 2 Chronicles chapter 26. We're at verse 16 beginning. But after Uzziah became powerful, and again, he's the king, remember. After he became powerful, his pride led to his downfall. He was unfaithful to the Lord his God and entered the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of incense. Azariah the priest with 80 other courageous priests of the Lord followed him in, and they confronted him and said, "It is not right for you, Uzziah, to burn incense to the Lord. That is for the priests, the descendants of Aaron, who have been consecrated to burn incense. Leave the sanctuary, for you have been unfaithful. And you will not be honored by the Lord God." Uzziah, who had a censer in his hand ready to burn incense, became angry. And while he was raging at the priests in their presence before the incense altar in the Lord's temple, leprosy broke out on his forehead. And when Azariah, the chief priest, and all the other priests looked at him, they saw he had leprosy on his forehead. So they hurried him out. Indeed, he himself was eager to leave, because of the Lord had afflicted him. King Uzziah had leprosy until the day he died, and he lived a separate house, leprous, and excluded from the temple of the Lord. And Jotham, his son, had charge of the palace and governed the people of the land. All right, think for a minute here about what happened. Can you kind of get a picture of this in your mind? I mean, as the good king went into the temple, wanting to burn incense, what's the problem? What happened? Wait.
What?
What happened with the king here? I mean, he wasn't always this way. What happened to the king? He didn't always go into the temple to try to offer sacrifice. What happened to the king?
Proud.
Yeah, something had happened with him. He got to thinking pretty well of himself. You know, after some time, some success, he became somebody, had some power. He thought, you know, I'm going to go into the temple, and I'm going to do this. Now, the priest tried to stop him. It's not for you, they said. It's not for you. It's for the priest. He already knew that. But they tried to remind him. It's not for you to burn incense. But he still didn't stop. And that's what's sort of amazing here. You would think that if his heart had been right, if he had a conscience that was right, that surely he would have kind of thought, you know, it's, oh, you're right. You know, I shouldn't have even come in here. But that's not even where his mind was at. I mean, he was intent on doing this. Now, was the temple the right place to burn incense? Well, yeah, it was. And was it right to burn incense to the Lord? Well, yes. Yeah, that was right too. But the king wasn't the one to offer the sacrifice. You ever hear people say, well, you know, if you get 2 out of 3, you're doing pretty good. I mean, how does that apply here? You know, Nadab and Abihu, they were priests. They were the right ones to offer, you know, a sacrifice. And burning incense was the right thing to do. They just got that fire thing kind of messed up. They had 2 out of 3. That didn't work. And with the king here, you know, 2 out of 3 wasn't good enough. You know, he should have known. He did know the difference. He did know that he was not supposed to do that. What about the punishment? You surprised? No. Why do you think it was leprosy? Yeah, boy. Yeah, for one thing, well, why is that? I mean, what about if the priest had leprosy? Unclean. Yeah, he couldn't go in the temple. In fact, he had to go outside the camp. Anybody with leprosy, you know. But yeah, absolutely, that would keep him out of the temple. But I don't think after this point they would have to be told again, you can't come in here. You? I mean, it's like the priest tried to hurry him out. Why? Why did they try to hurry him out? He didn't belong in there. And now he was unclean now. You know, and the temple itself was a symbol of purity. It was a symbol of the presence of God. Nothing would be impure before God. Oh, something for us to think about there. That no one impure would stand before the Lord, surely. And which is why the priests, if they had leprosy, could not even go into the temple. Those who were the ones to go into the temple. And so at this point, of course, the king is quite anxious to get out. Because he understands. I mean, now he understands. The Lord has struck him with leprosy. He wants to come out. But listen, the consequences, he still lived. But he had leprosy the rest of his life. He died with leprosy.
He ended up in this proud, powerful person, ended up being segregated.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know what? In fact, perhaps that was one of the most effective punishments that could be. Because here he was the king. He had everything. He lived in the palace. All the power and authority and the regality that comes with that. And now he's living in a leper's camp, watching all that's going on. That's pretty powerful in itself when you think about that. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Yeah. He's one of the kings, when you study the kings, that you start off by calling him a good king, and there wasn't so many of those. But he did some of the right things at one point. But you're right. He got off track. Lessons there again. All right. So we can kind of say again. He does. And it's interesting, too. I mean, we've seen others, you know, like King Saul. We spoke about him some the other day. God put him in place. God appointed him in part because he was humble. But God also took him out of that position, too, because he forgot who he was. And he forgot who God was. You know, he thought too well of himself. And God removed him. Let's look a little bit farther. 2 Samuel chapter 6. We're talking about the good King David here. David the king that's used as such a fine example for us in so many ways. David gets a little ahead of himself here too. The Ark of the Covenant has been out of the possession of God's people for some time, or at least at this point, not where David wanted it to be, which was in Jerusalem. And so the Ark of the Covenant had to be moved. I'm not really thinking that necessarily it was the easiest thing to move. I don't think it was that big, really. It was overlaid with gold, and I just imagine that it wasn't really light. And there was some distance to be traveled, you know, to get the Ark back to where it needed to be. We take up our story here in 2 Samuel chapter 6. And let's see, we're going to start reading here around verse 3. And it says, "They set the ark of God on a new cart and brought it from the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. Uzzah and Ahio, sons of Abinadab, were guiding the new cart with the ark of God on it, and Ahio was walking in front of it. David and the whole house of Israel were celebrating with all their might before the Lord with songs and with harps and lyres and tambourines and sistrums and cymbals. And when they came to the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah reached out and took hold of the ark of God because the oxen stumbled. And the Lord's anger burned against Uzzah because of the irreverent act. And therefore God struck him down and he died there beside the ark of God." This is a really interesting story to me. When you think of Uzzah and what he was trying to do and accomplish when he grabbed hold of the ark. And I've heard a number of people, when you read this story, they say something like, you know, I can't understand God in this instance. What was God doing? What was God thinking? And how, as we even talked to him the other day, how can a God who is so loving strike someone dead just because they were trying to do the right thing right here? Well, there's going to be some interesting discussion on this, I think. Let's try to think about it. Let's try to understand here just what this is all about. I mean, as we said, moving the ark, I just don't get the impression that moving the ark would be just the easiest thing in the world, especially in the fact they had to move it some distance. How was it supposed to be moved? So God gave some instruction in the book of Exodus about how this cart or how the ark was to be moved. And even who was to move it. There were certain ones who were authorized to move it. Not just any of the priests or anyone who was supposed to move the ark. It was actually, you know, Aaron and the sons of Aaron, you know, the priests who would cover over the ark and the other pieces of furniture, we might say, inside the temple, the articles. But they didn't actually do the moving. There were some others who did the moving. We'll read there maybe in a moment. But God did for sure specify how it was to be moved. And what was that? How was it to be moved? With poles. And in fact, when it was built, I mean, God's instruction here was very specific, you know, about the ark. In fact, I think we referenced that here somewhere, didn't we? How did God want the ark moved? It's on the next page. Hold your hand here for a minute. Let's just look at this. Exodus chapter 25. And there's no need to kind of maybe shortchange the answers on this, because really there's been some interesting discussion on this sometime. I can't understand why God would do this. How could God be so cruel to a man who was just trying to keep the ark of God from falling to the ground? But what did God say about moving this ark? In Exodus chapter 25, we begin at verse 13. Exodus 25, verse 13. Let's see here. Then make poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. Insert the poles into the rings on the sides of the chest to carry it. And the poles are to remain in the rings of this ark. They are not to be removed. And then put the ark in the testimony. Or no, put in the ark the testimony, which I give you, that is, you know, put the commandments inside the ark. So God's instructions about how to move the Ark of the Covenant was very specific. I mean, there were poles that were supposed to stay in these rings, you know, and so this was how it was supposed to be moved. Let's look at a couple of other passages. Go to Numbers chapter 4. Numbers chapter 4. We're just kind of picking out a few verses here that help us to understand the overall thought here of this story. God had given specific responsibilities for some of the different sons of Aaron. Verse 15, Numbers 4, verse 15. After Aaron and his sons have finished covering the holy furnishings and all the holy articles, and when the camp is ready to move, the Kohathites are to come and to do the carrying, because they must not touch the holy things or they will die. The Kohathites are to carry those things that are in the tent of meeting. So it would be Aaron and his sons who would do the covering up of these articles, of the furniture, so to speak, that was in the temple, in the tabernacle. But they didn't actually move it. It was the Kohathites who had the responsibility of doing that. So we see here even there's more specific instruction here that God has on the ark and what's supposed to happen, how it's supposed to be moved. So we go back to our story, 2 Samuel chapter 6. And let's just try to picture this. This is a day of celebration, let me tell you. David is beside himself because finally, the Ark of the Covenant, the Ark is coming home. And he has been looking forward to this. He has planned for this. He has looked at this as being his responsibility as the king that God has anointed to bring the Ark home. And so David, you know, and with those who are with him, I see a celebration that's taking place. And they are dancing around the ark, and there's instruments being played, and there's singing that's going on. It's all kinds of celebration. And as the ark is being moved on this cart, they just kind of move along with it. Can you picture that? Can you imagine how fast the celebration stopped when the ark was touched and Uzzah fell to the ground? Can you imagine? I mean, just a hush kind of goes over the crowd after they... Can you imagine? And can you just imagine as well those who are thinking, what happened? How could this happen on such a great and joyous day? Well, a great and joyous day in the eyes of some. What's God thinking about this? Yeah. Where is the reverence toward God in this? I mean, in the whole idea of bringing the ark back and it being moved, God is the one that has to be considered in this. Whether God caused the oxen to stumble or not, I don't know. You kind of can't help but wonder that a little bit. You know, kind of runs through your mind. But I don't know. But God made His point. I mean, we have no question about that.
If the ark had hit the ground,
Yeah, they got reminded pretty well right here.
Especially makes me wonder because it mentions it was on a threshing floor, which is a level patch of hemp.
Yeah, that's kind of the impression I would have too. It's like, how did the oxen stumble? Yeah, that's what I would think too. You know, we can kind of think about this in some different ways. I mean, what David was doing in our way of thinking might just be pretty logical. Well, he's a pretty smart king. I mean, he, you know, got the oxen, got a cart. I mean, there's a whole lot easier way to carry this thing. And it was a new cart because it would, of course, this deserved to be on a new cart. You know, and so there's one side from the human standpoint we think, well, David's pretty smart here. You know, he's using his head on this. You know, he's going to make this easier because they got a long way to go. But that still doesn't work.
I'm sure David was sincere in his heart in this worship that he was offering to God. Others were probably sincere in his effort to stay the ark. But their worship was being offered not according to truth. Mm-hmm. They didn't go back and look at what the law said about how to transport this ark.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Who had sent the ark back. You remember when it was put in the temple of Dagon and it fell over and they got to listen, we got to get rid of this. And they sent it back. And of course, they, operating out of their ignorance, they didn't know any better. They sent it back on a new cart.
Yeah.
And David is following their example rather than the pattern.
But he can't plead ignorance, though.
No, he can't plead ignorance. he later, as we go, if you go on.
That's right. Yeah. He didn't think that thing through too well. Daryl.
If you look at the big picture, go along with that, but they lost it in the first place because of disobedience. And then now that they're getting it back, they still can't even carry it back the right way.
Yeah. 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 Like what's going on here? Well, that's going to get corrected here in time. But it's come at a price. And at least it seems like it sure has everybody's attention right there. Applications. We need to be thinking about some applications here.
And in today's world, a lot of what we do in the religious world is because, well, that seems like a good idea.
Yeah.
We got a long way to take the ark, so we'll put it on a new cart, and we'll deal with it like it's supposed to. Something that says, well, this is a good idea. This will make it work smoother for us.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what God asked then nor now.
That's right. Right. Same principle. Yeah.
Can you worship any way you want to?
Here we go. I mean, we're getting down to brass tacks right here. Okay.
They were not worshiping.
They weren't doing what God said. But Neil, they were so happy. They were rejoicing. It was great worship going on for a while.
I think back in Leviticus 10, it says that the Lord, after this, the Lord said, I shall be treated as holy.
Yeah.
And they did not treat him as holy. Here it says that Uzzah acted with irreverence.
Irreverence, yeah.
So how do we treat God with reverence? How do we treat
And if ever there's a time, we always have to treat God with reverence, obviously. But if ever there is a time where that should be on our mind, is when we're worshiping Him. That we would know and recognize Him, you know, as holy. How can we lose that? Levi. To read the law. Mm-hmm. And he'll go back and do that, but
the ark, if you look at it, had been in this family's yard for the last 20 years, and it says he struck Uzzah for an error. If it had been in his yard for 20 years,
you would think. There was plenty of time to think about how we're going to move this, you know. But, look, we could come up with a few excuses here. Well, David was just so excited that he didn't think about it. Or he didn't think it through real well. Or that, you know, it had been so long since it had been moved, they'd kind of forgotten. Whatever, we can come up with a lot of excuses. Yeah. Where'd those poles go? You know, if we had just had the poles, we would have used them. It doesn't matter what we come up with. It doesn't make a wrong or right. I used to hate it when my dad would say that to me. Oh, and he had opportunity to say it a lot. You know, it doesn't make a wrong or right. Why can't you understand this? I don't know. You know. Whatever excuse we come up with does not make it right. Applications here, more applications. You think about religions today. Think about how people choose to worship God today. And what they might say, but it feels so good. It feels right. I know our worship is right because I feel it right here. I've heard that. Yeah. I mean, David and everybody was feeling pretty good about what was going on. They were rejoicing. God was not. That's right. Exactly right. And they would have pleased God in the process of that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we can follow God's instruction or we can go by our own feeling. And you know what? Every time we look at examples like that, if you go by feeling, it never works. It never works. Good thoughts. Good thoughts. You know, we talked some, I can't remember what we talked about. I mean, I talked to somebody else about this. Just as far as worship goes. I know we looked at this passage not long ago. Listen to this. Is this familiar? Jesus speaking. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name and cast out demons in your name and done many wonderful works in your name? And yet I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. Is there such a thing as lost religious people? Well, yeah. I mean, we can find a lot of examples throughout Scripture, whether it's Old Testament or New Testament. Those who might consider themselves religious in some way or some form, and yet are not doing what God wants them to do, and it's not pleasing to God. The same thing is true today. Different time, different circumstances, even a different law that we live under now compared to the law that David was living under. But the point and the principle is all the same. To reverence God, we have to obey Him completely, always. Other thoughts? Sandra, you want to make a comment? A while before we moved here, there was a preacher denominational church had a thing in the newspaper about if we hit a new attendance record or whatever it was, the pastor is going to throw money off of the, as it was said, throw money off of the roof of the church. And picture in the paper of him up there throwing money off. They had met their goal of 100 people or whatever it was, you know. It was just kind of one of these things of whatever it takes to fill the building, you know. That's where a lot of people's minds are at.
And I think
Oh, is that right?
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes. Yeah. Daryl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 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 Humble yourself or be humbled. Yeah, that's all that matters.
Do you think Uzzah was sincere in trying to keep the ark from falling off of that ark?
Critical point right here. You know, I mean, undoubtedly, he was just trying to keep the ark from falling. You know, I mean, it was just an automatic reaction, you know, to grab that. In fact, the king had put him in this position of walking alongside to make sure it didn't fall. You know, I mean, that would be important, and you don't want to displease the king. You know, I could almost imagine something. I want to mention this here, this point here. I mean, why would God be so upset about something so inconsequential as moving the ark this way? How would you respond to that? To some.
David actually identifies what they did wrong over in 1 Chronicles 15. Were you going to go there?
Go ahead. That's right. Then they got it right.
Yeah.
When they looked at the law. You know, what seems inconsequential to us is not necessarily inconsequential to God. And in fact, what we have to understand is we are not in the place or position of determining inconsequential. God tells us what to do. God gives us rule. God gives us law. We are the ones who follow. And we just need to understand that.
And if anything should have been inconsequential to the Israelites, it was the ark, which was
yes.
The spot where God met with his people once a year.
That's right. I mean, that this, which I think that's part of this whole story, too. I mean, the ark, with the cherubim on top, inside the tabernacle, this represented the very presence of God in every way. I mean, this is where he would appear to the priests. I mean, you can't get closer to God in that time, in that form, in a physical type way, than when you're talking about the Ark of the Covenant. And here they've abused that responsibility there. There's some other comments that I'd like us to make. When you look at page 22, about the middle part right there. Some points to think about and be prepared to make some comments. We're not going to spend just a ton of time on that on Sunday. But this is just more application. And I'll tell you, you know, as we've talked about, we kind of back up here for a moment. In the big picture of why we're looking at some of these lessons is when we're thinking about some examples to use, what would we say to people? We're sitting at the kitchen table with someone. We're trying to teach them about the power of God, His place, His authority. Some of these stories like this are so powerful and can be so helpful at setting some points and principles in the minds of people. And we need to understand these lessons very well ourselves so that we can tell them to others. And I'd like to spend a little bit more time on that on Sunday, Lord willing, and deal with that. Gene.
To distinguish what denominations are doing, but I don't think that has a place in personal evangelism. We're getting a cart before us here.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be using those examples.
For us. Right.
He uses the foolishness to
teach us.
Make the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The
to teach us.
Not
so wise.
That's
right. Good comments tonight, y'all. Appreciate everything you've said. Lord willing, page 22, we'll finish that up on Sunday. Thank you.